Ooh. Hello and welcome to the Weird Things Podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Ahoy, 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 ahoy.
And Justin Robert Young.
Hi, friends.
Finally, a slow week for AI, everybody.
This is why I love this program, man. I am certain that it has been whiplash for you guys. Justin was showing me some video stuff. I don't know nothing about nothing, and I can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah. There'll be things to talk about. But for right now, let's talk about... okay, so this week we had, we'll go in order. We'll talk about Google, Anthropic, and then OpenAI. Actually, Google, we'll do Google, then we'll do OpenAI, then we'll do Anthropic, then OpenAI, in the order of events of news that happened. Okay.
Holy moly.
Google had their I/O event, and, Google will show a bunch of things, and sometimes they'll show a lot of things that are far out there that you don't get to play with or use yet. Then they get to show some stuff that you get to use, and always Google's always a mixed bag because they've, we can all remember the Google Glass demo, which by the way was brought back, and we could be like, man, this looks amazing, and then you use it and you're like, meh. And I would say that Google had been doing some exciting AI events before that kind of didn't fall through. Like, remember when GPT-4 came out, we're like, oh, Google has something that blows OpenAI away. Turned out they did.
Yeah.
But over time, things got better. And then finally, they released a little while ago, Gemini 2.5, which is a great model, an absolutely great model. And Google has brilliant people there, and Google can cook in places and they can really cook. They showed some stuff at I.O. And I would say the thing that was the real showstopper was Veo 3. And Veo is their image generation model. OpenAI has Sora. But OpenAI Sora, the only ones that we can use is basically Sora Turbo, which when you pay for a tier, you get X number of completions. Well, Google released Sora 2 a while ago, which was way more capable, apparently. It looked way more capable than Sora,
VO2.
Than Turbo.
VO2.
VO2, which was, thank you. VO2, which was, which was a much bigger model than Sora Turbo and did way better, more visuals. And then they've released VO3, which there's some confusion because sometimes you go in to go think you're using VO3 and you're using VO2. And some people are like, oh, this isn't as good. It's like, no, the VO3 one is, it's a way more expensive one, but it looks amazing. And Justin, you've played with it. I played a little bit. I've only played a VO2. I haven't played a VO3 yet. And have you played a VO3?
Oh, indeed I have. My wife and I spent a steamy date night on Wednesday just prompting VO3. So
how did you get access, by the way? Are you paying for it?
I paid
the $250.
Yeah. I think it's a trial that $150 for 3 months and then it goes to $250. So I don't know.
You went up to $150. All right.
Yeah. So I don't know how long I will be at $150, but I am at $150 right now because I wanted to see, really, like this is just my general philosophy when it comes to AI stuff. And the reason why I'm interested, I'm willing to pay to get into the tent to see what it is that like AI has been for the last 2 years, in my opinion, it's about Fast and the Furious racing for pinks and not concept cars. This isn't about funny demos. This isn't about, benchmarks. To me, it is put it in people's hands. How fast can it go? And obviously you've seen a lot of this competition in fields that I am not as proficient in, like coding and stuff like that, but visuals, audio beds, this is kind of my world. And the biggest thing with VO3 is that it is the first video model that I am aware of that is a complete package of, if you're prompting it, not only do you get the visuals, you get ambient audio, you get voices, you get at times scores and sound effects that go along with it. I am here to say it's the best video model on the planet. I don't think anything is particularly close to it, especially considering those benchmarks, which it hits. It does win the race. It is living life a quarter mile at a time, and it came in first when it comes to having the audio match to what it is. It is a little difficult to prompt around. I have no idea how much compute it is using per shot. It has to be absolutely insane what it is costing to pump out the videos that they are pumping out. The biggest quirk with it is that it will put subtitles, oftentimes gibberish subtitles, on the video itself when you are prompting it. It's actually a funny thing. If you look at one of the videos that they put out, that Google put out, it's a bunch of actors looking into the camera in various scenarios saying, "We can talk now," right? But you'll even notice in their promo video, some of them have subtitles on the screen, which means that they just got a great take and the subtitle wasn't gibberish, so they wound up using it. It's sometimes hard to put together. There's no great way to prompt through a specific scene. What Ashley and I were trying to do on Wednesday was actually kind of put a real script into it that was two people interacting with each other with movements. That was a little bit challenging to get to. And again, it's like when you got to rip through eight versions of something that has to be just, I have to imagine that this is possibly like three digits per shot on the kind of compute that they need for stuff like this. But like, you know, it's pretty insane what it's able to do. It's not always perfect, but by far it sets a totally new benchmark when it comes to what you should expect from one shot prompting on a video model that also has these audio capabilities. It is really extraordinary.
Yeah, I think we're at a point where, you know, Google has a ton of compute, and throw this there. OpenAI is more compute restrained than Google is. And that's why when OpenAI did Sora, they decided to do Sora Turbo. They've been, you know, in certain cases, they've had decided, you know, what their product releases are going to be. That's why they didn't put the Sora Pro out there because of this. I think where Google's like, hey, we're Google, we got the compute and we can do this. And the quality of this has been fantastic. And as you said, the challenge is we get to see the final product, not the steps that it took to make it. And that's going to be kind of like the next big steps is to understand how we can make it easier to produce these things. And I think video solved. I think I don't say this solution is the perfect solution, but I think it's shown us the quality you can now do with AI. The next step is to really figure out how you interface with it, what you use for your inputs with it, and everything else that works with it. But I think that if you're in Hollywood right now, you need to be really thinking about how things work. And I don't think it means don't hire actors. I think there's a world where you let actors do what they do best. But when it comes to sets and locations and a lot of other stuff, you know, why pay for things when you don't need to?
Well, I mean, think about these models in the same way that we thought about CGI and green screen with something like Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, both mm-hmm. the original short and then eventually the feature. If you look at where some of the conversation was around, like, oh, computer graphics, I mean, this is around the time that, you know, George Lucas was openly musing about the idea that he might not need actors anymore. He was going to, you know, shoot once and then digitally alter people's lips so he could get the exact right dialogue that he wanted. Stuff that's probably more feasible today than it was in 1999 when George was talking about it, ever the futuristic optimist. But now, don't think about it like I don't need actors. But if you think about it in a world of like, hey, now on a green screen with the right lighting, I could shoot an actor and it could be something totally different. I could have a world that would be much harder to recreate or it would take a lot of time and effort in a CGI modeled capacity that now you can one shot a prompt and loop it or do a bunch of prompting and find different stuff. Like, it just opens up a lot of capabilities and possibilities. I know one of the things that you've mentioned a lot, Andrew, is if you're doing a documentary about ancient history and you want to demonstrate how things would look based on the historical realities, you can now prompt your way to a demo that doesn't look bad. That would look good. And you can now heighten something that otherwise would not have been within your budget. You know, I think that's where the 0 to 1, I think, is the most pronounced.
And I'll tell you, there's the thing that you can do with AI that I think people, there's a lot of methods. There's, again, I follow the models and I know what the technical is capable, and I kind of see where Hollywood is still like 3 years behind. I don't need a green screen. I could go shoot you and Brian inside of a car through a car window with a microphone, then make it a spaceship. You know, I go put you guys in an actual set, but then all of a sudden make it a bigger set, and I can produce things like plays and make them feel like movies.
Well, also consider, like, out there are people who are legitimately experts in their domain, and they gave, let's say, legitimately the best, most relevant, prescient talk, but it happens to be under fluorescent lights with poor audio or whatever. Imagine just being able to hand it, you know, you probably, there will be a boutique suite of like, you want to be on stage? You want to have a fake audience there? You just want it to look like a nice theater? You want it to look like you're on location or whatever? Like that, I think that people are really undervaluing the killer app for all this video is corporate training videos. All of that stuff, like in general, there's no reason that Wendy should be in the business of casting, directors, makeup, and all that stuff, when what they need to explain is, you know, how to use the fry machine correctly and safely. That's all stuff where it's like, hey, give me the OSHA guidelines, make the video that gets certified as, yes, this teaches it effectively. And then there's enough narrative and visual treats that all of a sudden this minimum, and of course, you know, this is before we get to the question of whether or not those minimum wage jobs will still be around.
Yeah, but, I know. But, like, by the time it's done, you understand
my, but you understand my meaning is like, we know that better storytelling gets the point across better.
Oh, yeah. You think about if our senior year of high school, we all make documentaries about Roman history, and then we go to a film festival, we watch the things we all produced.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there's a world where we think about how, not just how the industry people use it, but how students and other people use these tools, because making a thing is a way to learn about a thing. And if you said, Andrew, you've got to make a 20-minute documentary about Julius Caesar, your final is going to be, we're going to do a film festival and everybody's going to do one on a different person, the Roman Empire, whatever. I think you'd have a lot of students know a lot more about the Roman Empire. I think you'd have them learn a lot more, because by taking a hand and teaching themselves and learning and using these tools to do it, we've seen that. We talked about that before with audio and whatnot. Like, when you sat down to go write a song about a thing you're trying to remember, the mere act of trying to do that helped you. And the song is this way to repeat it. It's like, yeah, I think that we think about these things. You know, we looked at the iPhone and we thought one day, you know, somebody will be making feature films on their phone. I'm like, well, yeah, but that's not what we ended up using it for. So we created an entire new industry of people like Brian and other people who created entire new categories of content. And I think I'm just super guilty of that kind of like looking at the thing now and squeezing the thing in, like, well, let that thing be its own thing. And I'm excited. And I think hats off to Google. I think they've done a really good job. They've been building some state-of-the-art models. I think that, you know, my note that I said is that I haven't seen them come up with a big paradigm yet, like OpenAI did with the reasoning system and the O3 stuff, you know, the thinking systems and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think they're capable of it, and that'll be a thing to see what happens. And so, you know, they're where we thought they would be 2 years ago, but they're here. And you can't deny that.
Let me just say this in terms of the limitations of VO3. I think that part of the reason why you have seen the most compelling versions of it in these compendiums, like cuts between different things or stuff that feels like a newsreel or something like that, is because it is best used now. I don't know if there are other tools that they are giving to other filmmakers that they allowed to make more cohesive, longer form stories, but I was not able to do anything like that. What I wanted to do was prompt my way through a scene between two characters. I could not do that. Right now, their assemble tool is still built for VO2, which does not have audio. So as soon as you put it into to the assembly tool, it strips the audio out of it, and you cannot extend scenes with VO3 right now. Again, my assumption is that they are burning a tremendous amount of cash on this thing in the current form, and to expand those capabilities would probably be something even more. That being said, without that, I don't know how long I'm going to keep the $150 Google thing. I think that it might not be for me right now. It doesn't mean that it's not the best in class. It's just that I wouldn't have a business case for it today. You know, maybe I will in the future, but not now.
Yeah. But I would say, again, hats off to Google. I think they've built
the tech incredible is amazing. Model.
Yeah, they've done some really great stuff here. And I get into this all the time, like, who's going to win, OpenAI or Google? And I'm like, yeah, listen, I'm, you know, very much aligned with Team OpenAI on many things. But I'm also kind of like, the world is going to be so much bigger. I just stopped on a call before this call with somebody who's with a VC firm talking about who wins. I'm like, I don't think that it's the thing where, like the iPhone wars, the Android wars. I don't think it's a thing where you have a winner, that you do have some losers, but you have companies that are just, some are going to be growing at 30% per year. Some are growing at 44%. Sometimes that's going to change. And I'm not ready to write Google off.
Also, I think we got a bunch of different winners in that, the iPhone Android wars. It's like, if you look at where Google actually makes its money, the whole point of Android was to keep people Google searching. And guess what? They did.
So we had a story come out earlier in the week. It was from Bloomberg, did a piece about Apple and Apple's AI efforts. Mm-hmm. And basically how Apple kind of dropped the ball, continued to drop the ball. And I've made the argument, I've come to the painful realization Apple is a 2006 logistics company still stuck in that world. And every new iPhone announcement that spends half of it talking about the camera, I realize that like they're really kind of boxed themselves in. And I don't like that conclusion. I don't want to accept it. But then, you know, my paperweight called an Apple Vision Pro sits behind me. And I won't even get to the nightmare of going to the Apple support about stuff. It's been a frustrating thing. And so making matters more complicated, after Google I/O, we got another I/O announcement.
What was Justin, this one?
Yeah, do you want to
the anointing? Justin? The anointing of Sam Altman, held Simba-like aloft by Johnny Ive, anointing him as the new Steve Jobs. The Panchen Lama has finally found.
I'm going to need. I'm going to need more metaphors to really understand what's happening here.
Brian, we're Johnny talking Ive, to you, Justin. You have to use metaphor on top of metaphors.
Johnny Ive and Sam Altman made an announcement, and that was that Johnny Ive's design firm is being acquired by OpenAI for $6.5 billion, and that they are working on what they view to be a game-changing hardware device that will be released at some point after this year. There are a lot of rumors around it, but the symbolism of the images and the words could not be clearer, and that is that, I think the quote I saw online was, to this was, wow, finally, Apple's AI strategy is being rolled out.
They did this video, which I highly recommend you check out. Beautifully shot video where Johnny and Sam go meet at the Cafe Zoetrope, which is Francis Ford Coppola's restaurant in San Francisco, which the first time I ever went there, I saw Francis Ford Coppola there talking to some older Italian ladies, pointing out pictures and saying, this is my mentor and stuff. And so it was remarkable to see. My wife, who is a filmmaker, was just in awe and of the video, of how well it was presented. And I'm like, well, we need to do something Johnny Ive. It's going to be that. So what this is basically Sam and Johnny have been friends now for 2 years. As we've learned, they created a company called I/O. One of the backers, by the way.
They first tried to buy a razor blade company. Then they tried to buy a mattress company.
So they call this I/O, and the backers, one of the backers, by the way, is Emerson Collective, which is Lauren Powell Jobs, is company Steve Jobs' widow. She has an organization that's involved in philanthropic and other efforts, in the Atlantic, but they also backed Johnny Ive in I/O, and they've also backed OpenAI. And that was a thing I didn't see getting any coverage anywhere, was the fact that, you know, this has the blessing of Lauren Powell Jobs. So it's a very interesting thing to see that the guy who, you know, made the best voiceovers for tech videos ever is now come to OpenAI and to help them launch a new generation of products.
Yeah. Is this I only saw the headline blow past talking about it, similar to the I don't know, the pendant clip thing. Is that the gizmo?
Nobody knows. Okay. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
All right. And Sam was financially backed that, by the way. He backed one of the people who supported Humane Pen, because part of the reason Humane Pen had interest was, we know the phone isn't the only form factor. We know the phone isn't the end of the story on these devices. I don't think it was a thing that clips to my chest and did everything they did. When I saw the Humane, immediately I knew this wasn't it for me. And then I think other people felt the same way. But I don't think we should be angry at them for trying to find a new pattern or a new thing, particularly if we didn't invest in it. I think that we all know that we're using these things much more differently. You know, I hold on to my AirPod case way more often than a lot of other things. I do think a lot about, what if I had a thing that was just everything was inside of here and just my AirPods, and this was my compute. We don't know what they're building. We don't know yet. I would love to sit down with the two of them and ask some questions about this and find out more. You know, but until then, we just know that they're working together. And now the IO team is now handling design across OpenAI. And for me, having been there when there's 150 people and the guy in charge of design sat in front of me, it's just
pretty good.
Like crazy. It's just crazy. It's absolutely crazy to think about the idea that, you know, sitting there like, yeah, what if we got Johnny Ive and, you know, 40 person team of designers and physicists and other people to go work on this stuff? Like, cool. Do I get Spider-Man powers before or after this happens?
You know, I believe that this device is going to be the most gossiped about, reported about device since the iPhone. If you remember, not after the iPhone came out, but if you were following the tech press before it, all of the rumors, all of the guesses as to the design, that's already begun. We have, you know, it's going to be very, very interesting, but it's going to be, you know, I don't think that we're going to really hear anything concrete about it for a year. And a lot of people are going to continue to guess. But the craziest thing about it is that we're going to guess about what this thing is, but remember where we were a year ago when it came to AI development. Like, what are the models? What are the things that we are going to be putting into any kind of hardware device that would come out? That's pretty crazy to think of. And, you know, it's, you know, OpenAI knows what the capabilities are roughly going to be, and they're going to be able to release something that takes advantage of them, which is pretty wild, man. I mean, it's certainly an audacious. The confidence in that that video, which not only says Johnny Ive is coming to OpenAI, it very much frames Sam Altman in a Steve Jobsian light, which is, I mean, about as sacred as you can evoke somebody in Silicon Valley. But also, like, bullish on, like, San Francisco, like, yeah, very specifically a pro, like, we're going to bring San Francisco back energy to it. Like, it is, if it goes where OpenAI wants it to go, it's going to be a line in the sand kind of moment for them.
There's two things. Daniel Lorre, who's the new mayor of San Francisco, who Sam was on his committee to help him kind of, you know, advise, retweeted the video, which I thought was interesting. So Daniel Lorre retweeted the video. Second, I was down the Embarcado over by Pier 39, Embarcadero, and I saw a sign I'd never noticed before. And it talked about the revitalization of San Francisco that started in 2002, thanks to OpenAI. There's a whole sign there that's just like, wow, this is a very... I do argue. It's like ChatGPT or GPT-3, the flourishing of AI and other AI companies. And part of it was just an unlock. Part of it was there were brilliant people otherwise working on stuff, and there was this unlock that happened. And somebody who loves the city of San Francisco and also is a big critic of the city of San Francisco, it's exciting to see, because you go there and you go like, man, this really is a beautiful place. And to make this the epicenter of AI and whatnot is cool. And they chose that. I was driving my parents through there yesterday, and we just drove right by that building where the Zoetrope Cafe is. And it was arched the day before. And it was just, I'm like, there it is. You know, there's the place. So So we had this begin. It's a, you know, some people said, well, they announced nothing. I'm like, well, they didn't show you a product, but they announced a lot. This is turf. They told you the alignment of where OpenAI is headed over the next 10 years. They told you where Johnny Ive, who came out of Apple, who was part of a historic part, where Johnny Ive is throwing his lot into that. They've shown you that there is this goal, and there was leaked stuff too about how ambitious they're trying to be. We also got the announcement of, hey, we had last week, it was Disneyland building a park in the UAE, and now we're getting Stargate UAE. Well, so,
but before we go further on the OpenAI thing, the one thing about that announcement, it was as much about what they announced they were not going to do, because yeah. OpenAI has every opportunity in front of them when it comes to hardware. And, you know, Google has made a decision long ago that, yes, they're going to every once in a while make their own flagship stuff, but by and large, they want to license out to other people. That was their idea with Android. They have built Google into products that wanted to build Google into their products. What OpenAI said is that we are not going in that direction. We are going to go in the direction where we will build our own hardware. Now, does that preclude them from ever doing any kind of licensing kind of stuff? No, but what they wanted to signal here was we brought in the guy who made the iPhone, the guy who made the MacBook. That's the level that we are going to promise you our devices are going to look and feel like a polished, finished product. And according to what they say that they are testing in terms of prototypes, it is revolutionary. So to me, it was as much taking things off the table as it was announcing anything specific.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious to see what happens next. So we have that. Now we're halfway into the week, everybody. Anthropic, which had been kind of quiet for a while, although, you know, Anthropic had came out with the Model Context Protocol, MCP, which has set a lot of people on fire because it was this framework of which saying how you could have a chat bot talk to servers and things in the cloud, which they could do before, but the idea of saying, let's all use the same protocol. So if you're building a platform, just make it MCP compliant and it would be much, much easier. And it was a wonderful kind of innovation that Microsoft had something like this, but nothing caught attention like Anthropic did with MCP. And that's one of the things with Google, I haven't seen like them from them. Anthropic came out with the MCP protocol. I went to an event a week ago, an MCP night, which was this big event. It was all about building with MCP, and that's how excited people are. OpenAI has fully embraced this and is supporting the MCP guidance group to say, yes, we love this. They're putting this into their API. They've embraced this. And so it shows you that Anthropic is thinking very deeply and doing some really good things when it comes to helping make these things more capable. But people kept going, well, Gemini is now the top of the leaderboard. And, you know, these O4 models and the O3, you know, the O3 model, when it comes to like the really highly advanced stuff, we talk about the SEAL test and all that is really on tops there. So like for the regular leaderboards, you know, Gemini is doing great. For the highly agentic or close to AGI sort of stuff, the OpenAI models are doing well, where Anthropic hasn't been quite as much of a show there. Although the Claude model, the Claude 3.5 and 3.7 are great models. They're fantastic models. Although I started switching to O4 Mini because I think it was really comparable. Well, Anthropic just dropped Claude 4 Sonnet and Claude 4 and Sonnet 4. So they've got their two new models. And on the leaderboards, they're doing great. They're beasts. They're super capable, very, very highly capable. We're getting some really, really good reports out of that. And for the cost per compute, excellent. So Anthropic has shown they've done that. We have noticed that... it's not like we're seeing these big, huge GPT-2 to GPT-3 or GPT-3 to GPT-4 level moves. That happened with the reasoning models, but we haven't had that happen here. But I would say the code examples I've seen people do, like the single shot code me in this 3D environment like this, seem fantastic. It seems like it's an absolutely great coding model for certain kinds of code.
So how can I put it? A lot of times in fast moving technologies, there's a decision to wait for the next wave to implement stuff at a at an institutional level, is there much of a sense that anybody's waiting, or are they just hitting the ground like, we're going to base it on this and then we're going to rebuild it next week when the faster thing happens? Or like, and obviously we can't just reduce any one company to it, because everyone's going to be deciding their own projects. But I'm curious whether or not, I'm curious who's taking a wait and see approach on this, and who's best positioned to immediately seize on what's available today and then redo it next week if need be.
If you're coding, whether or not you use Cursor or use Windsurf or like VS Code, you can switch between whatever model. I can go in there and drop a tab and do that. So that's not going to affect me. Some companies will say what's approved and what's not approved because of like how their own testing and stuff. When it comes to, you know, the problem is that it's not just the model, it's the ecosystem around it, which people are realizing. I think Claude is great, but you go use Claude and you get very quickly warnings, you're going to run out of compute very quickly here. And even with the older Claude models, you would get a warning, your thread is too long, start a new thread. I'm like, I'm deep into a conversation here and you're telling me that I need to stop this and pick up somewhere else, and not even giving me a button to like, hey, create a summary to pick up everywhere else, which to me is just like, I don't think I heard indirectly that they're not really putting a lot of effort in the chatbot space, because I think that they know they're at a disadvantage right now because the managed daily usage that OpenAI has more data on how people use these chatbots than anybody else, the actual like daily usage of this. So OpenAI is able to move and innovate there in a much faster pace. So Anthropic has decided to focus, I think, a lot on their model development. And by the way, too, they had a little bit of a comms nightmare. And I saw it coming because I saw the tweet. And I'm like, I think I know what you mean. Nobody will understand what you're going to mean. And this is going to cause a disaster,
This is Anthropic we're talking about?
Anthropic, okay. Yeah. So what happened was, when they go do this, and Anthropic is very, very diligent about safety testing, extremely diligent about safety testing stuff. And they'll do tests where you'll give the models access to the internet, or tell it has tools, tell it can do things and see how it handles situations. And in one set or something, somebody asked it to do something that might have violated IP. And in the test situation, the model's like, well, I'm going to write a letter to Anthropic and I'm going to notify the authorities that you did this. Okay. So an Anthropic researcher said, yes, we found in this one situation it did this. Well, the Twitter being Twitter and some very smart people, not sometimes acting very smart, thought the actual in production version of this will narc on you and report you to the authorities, which it does not, you know, which it doesn't do. But that was the meme for like a day. And then people are still like, oh, my God, I can't believe Anthropic's going to be like, no, they were. And the researcher had to delete the tweet and had to say, hey, listen, what I was trying to say is when we were testing it, we told it could do these things, it would do that. But it's still kind of like, so your model wants to narc on me. But I felt my heart went out to them because I watched this thing happen. I'm like, people are going to misread. I knew what he meant when he said that, but most people didn't. And then they had to sit, you know, on what should be a celebration of a highly capable model, all of a sudden got overshadowed by, you know, a poorly written tweet and people just jumping to conclusions.
Yeah. That's sad.
So now, pivot back to OpenAI for Friday, right before the podcast. The latest news there, by the way, is remember Operator?
Yeah.
Remember the model we liked, but you know, the idea we liked, but the execution was a little bit of a challenge. Operator got an update. They switched it to the O3 reasoning model, and I've been playing with it. And it's pretty damn good. Now, Google launched Mariner, by the way, their browser-based tool, which we'll see. I don't know how much I trust the company that was trying to take away technologies to remove certain kinds of spyware and adware, because it hurt their advertising business to build an AI for running a browser. So I'll play with that. But Operator from OpenAI, by the way, like I said, got a bigger update. And I just ran a couple things. And while we're on the show, ran some things that it failed on me before. And was able to do them really well.
What's the thing I should try right now for us to see?
I mean, you think about like what would be a task or something like this. You could say like, hey, could you find me like, you know, I need six different videos.
How about a hotel in Atlanta on Memorial Day or on Labor Day?
All right, Brian's typing in.
All right. So I just wrote book a hotel in Atlanta on Labor Day weekend.
All right.
I'm thrilled that it's not just shouting, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
So it's got the operator browser, which we're watching it open, and it did a search for booking.com Atlanta hotels, opening another browser tab, and it's moving with about the speed and efficiency of what you would expect a talented intern to be doing.
Yeah.
So maybe the key here is, you know, the older version of operator would fail on a lot of tasks because it's a pretty complicated process, right? So it's taking a picture of a browser, analyzing it, and then trying to figure out what the next step of that process is going to be. But what it has now under the hood is the best in class reasoning model that OpenAI has. And so the decisions that it is going to make, it might not physically go to click the button faster, but the amount of wrong times it would click it should be significantly reduced because it's going to be more correct in its guesses and assumptions than it would be otherwise.
Yeah. It's a very interesting.
And so here we go. Yeah, it is selecting starting on Friday, and we'll see if it gets the end of Labor Day correctly.
So while that does, I'll tell you some of the tasks I've been doing, which like, hey, collect me a bunch of sci-fi interfaces. Show me, can you give me a bunch of comedy clips pre-1980? Can you find me these things? And so I think a lot of like collecting and going around the web and doing a lot of repetitive stuff, you can do that.
Oh, that's very good. Useful. So for example, one of the things that I wanted to do, I did a one-off and I'd like to do more of them, but I want to add a little bit of a theatrical conceit to a Quest video where it's like, let's say I've got an idea of like, can I do blank with AI? Right. And rather than just me in an office typing, which is fine, I would love it if there was a little bit of theatricality where it's like there was an API level where there's just the interface was I can talk into a microphone and then as though we're watching War Games or the scene from Alien or whatever, or Seth Brundle in Interrogate the Computer about the telepods, the responses would just be a cursor text on a screen. Do I don't need any special qualifications to get like a OpenAI API key or anything to set up a front end for that?
No, there's for the higher level models, you have to go do like an identity check, which that you just go through there. But no, you just go in and you go on the back and say, I want API access and go do that.
Cool. Well, I want to try to do that. I want to make a 1970s AI talking box thing.
Do it, do it, do it. I would tell you that one of the things you can do too is download Windsurf, the code tool, and you can try from there. And there's also OpenAI announced Codex, by the way, too, which is their other thing. If you have a GitHub repo, which is another thing. And so
Windsurf is WINDSURF.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can literally get that started and go into the sidebar, and you need to create a folder where it's working from. But you can say, my name is Brian. I am a noob.
Yeah. That's exactly what I need.
Help me learn to do this.
They're doing
like free credits with OpenAI and stuff too.
Oh, got it. So this would live on the computer but the interaction would be with my OpenAI account.
Well, yeah, you can help you build a thing. It depends on what you really want to build. And so if you want to start building stuff, you can do that. Another thing to play with too is Replit. Replit agent's really good.
R-E-P-L-I-T?
Yeah. I would say that, I mean, for anybody out there, like the whole code is dead is like, it's silly. It's literally, not to say that you have to, like I spend all my time, I spend way more time in writing, creating code than I did before, not necessarily as much time writing code. because it comes very easy. I sent Justin a link to something that was a vibe coding thing that I built while building something else that was literally like, oh, that's running. Let me go do this. Okay, back to the other thing. Oh, let me go do this. And that would have been a full-time project for me.
That's cool.
So, you know, it is a this is when the reach of everybody, and you have the world's most patient teacher right now to teach you how to do this stuff too.
Look at that. We got options at booking.com. Lie and say I have a medical reason for needing blah, 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 blah.
Brian leaking his secret IRL prompts.
Yeah, right?
So anyhow, highly recommend you try all this stuff out there, whether it's Anthropic, whether it's Google or OpenAI. There's so many cool tools to play with here. You guys want to do picks?
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, I got a pick. It's a movie called Friendship, and it stuck with me a lot. And
I didn't realize it was out.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me see how it's being received. I know that the initial,
I think it's in select locations right now. It's rolling out indie movie style.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Yeah. 89% on Rotten Tomatoes for what that's worth, but it very much expects you to know something about Tim Robinson's comedy, and it leans very much into it, but also it takes that knowledge and kind of twists it against you in fun ways. I liked it a lot. I will almost certainly go see it again, and it kind of haunts me in certain ways. It's a commentary on a few things. I like it.
Very cool.
I'm excited to see it. I mean, when I am able to go see any, the movies are good now, and unfortunately leaving my house is at a priority.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pumped. I've heard it is I Love You Man for Sickos is how it is being promoted, but that's pretty much all anyone wants to talk about it. I'm guessing because it has some layers beyond what it just looks like on the surface and in the trailer. Is that safe to say, Brian?
Yeah, yes. And it's one of those things where I thought I was feeling smart about saying, did you notice this layer? And then Bonnie says, yeah, because did you notice this layer even beneath it? And I'm like, oh, son of a gun. So now I want to watch it again, watching it entirely from the perspective of just one, like a fourth or fifth place character in the lineup. But like there's a strangeness to this character that now I want to watch the whole movie and just see it from their perspective.
Very, very, very exciting. I'm at the point where apparently Andor gets good.
Which episode?
We finished episode 6, so now apparently it gets good.
Can confirm.
I will say that I liked the second 3 episodes more than I liked the first 3 episodes. The first 3 episodes had me thinking Andor bad now. But the second 3 episodes are frustrating. What they have as the conclusion, I remain consistent that boy, that would have been a great ending to the second episode. The first 3 episodes for sure could have been one episode, and the second 3 episodes probably could have been one episode. Maybe you could stretch it into 2. Did not need to be 3. Also, it has this thing Andor does where the first season was so great because they kept introducing new sets of characters, and you're like, oh man, this is what a bummer, man. This season was cooking when it was on the blank planet, and now they're on another planet with another set of characters. And then some of them live, some of them die. But the problem I'm having in season 2 is that, holy crap, is it Game of Thrones level? Like, who was that guy? Was he the one with the credits or the one with the blaster? Like, were they in the thing or the other thing? I'm excited to see the rest of it. I will credit the second three episodes by saying that at least all my favorite characters were on screen whenever the show was going, which was not the case with the first three episodes.
The gang that could not shoot straight.
Well, I mean, look, so far, season two does not have season one's charm of introducing new characters that I like and want to see more of. Every time that they introduce new characters, I'm like, boy, do I hope all of you die so we can get back to hanging out with the characters I like.
Yeah, I can't wait for it to get good because...
Where are you at episode six too?
Yeah, I'm at episode. We kind of at the end of episode six, our energy just sort of wasted away. Our will to continue was just
by all available objective metrics, the final six are at its peak of its powers. So
I believe I gotta convince my wife of this. You know, I believe this.
Yeah. All right. There we go. My pick is Andor. La Resistance lives on.
You know, not every classic film gets its due at the time. Sometimes it has to have a small group of people that understand and see what the value of it is there. Mm-hmm. And it can take time for other people to appreciate and say this, you know what, this is a piece of cinema that we really should admire and hold up to. And sometimes things take a long time for us to realize how much, how much of a gift this thing was. And in 1988, February, a little movie came out that didn't quite get as much due from the critics as it should have. And sure, I could argue the acting's clunky and sometimes outright amateurish, but it was a debut for a couple talents, one of which was Forrest Whitaker. Another one is a Belgian actor by the name of Jean-Claude Van Damme. I'm talking about Bloodsport. Just went back and watched that, man.
That was 88? I thought that was a little bit earlier than that. Wild. Man, that one scene, that whole movie is that one glorious shot when he accidentally punches the hell out of that dude's face. Oh, that's amazing.
Well, there's a lot of good shots in there.
You can see that like, yeah, if you watch the shot, because it's in ultra slow motion, perfectly shot, perfectly focused, they cut it right as his genuine horror is dawning on his face, that he definitely just punched the hell out of that dude.
Yeah, so that was a movie that apparently the production, there's some YouTube videos about the production of it, where Jean-Claude Van Damme had been in, like, he'd been cast in The Predator to play the Predator alien and convinced Canon Group or whatever that he was, you know, he's starring with Arnold Schwarzenegger in this, and then that they should go do this movie called Bloodsport, which is based upon the completely true life story of Frank Dux, you know, the Dukes, the guy that, you know, competed in a super secret Kumite that's so secret nobody else ever heard of it.
I mean, it wouldn't be secret otherwise.
Yeah, it was the world record, champion record for the Kumite, which you can never find anybody else who talk about the Kumite except for Frank Dukes. But, and he could make a movie about it. But it's a
secret. The movie rules.
The movie does rule. The movie of a forged in the iron, you know, smelting pit of BS. It was made for $1.5 million. You get Forrest Whitaker's in it, one of his first roles, you know, starry roles, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and it's part of it because you go, man, there are scenes like this acting is terrible. Like particularly like the kid that plays the young Frank Dux is like just some French kid is like, I went to karate. It's just sounds like Hervé Villechaize was his voice coach. Again, I just watched that the other night. So yeah.
You know that there's a scene that was, I'm certain, movie magic, but I was shocked to find out actually works. There's a scene where somebody's like, snatch the coin out of my hand, and the guy not only snatches the coin out of the hand, but substitutes it for another coin. You know, that trick actually works, right? We tested it. We did it on Scam School. if you classic palm a coin and you just let it drop while you slap your hand down, and first of all, knocking their hand causes the coin in their hand to go into yours, but also the coin that you're dropping is the one that they close their hand around their fist. And so it really is like magic. Like they're holding a quarter and you try to snatch it before they, and they close it and they will feel that they have the coin. And then they get that awesome moment straight out of the movie of opening their hand to reveal some foreign Chinese coin.
I gotta go watch that video now and try that, Brian. So that's my pick, Bloodsport, with the song, hit song, Kumite. 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 But it's a secret, guys. But we can very make secret. A movie about the Kumite and a pop song called Kumite. It's been weird.